In 2008, as Lehman Brothers filed for bankruptcy and the economy teetered on the brink of collapse, the Bush administration came up with a plan to save the banks that were deemed too big to fail. They called it the Troubled Asset Relief Program, or TARP. Almost every major financial institution in the United States received some TARP money, but TARP was also supposed to help homeowners struggling to pay their mortgages in the wake of the financial crisis. TARP may have succeeded in saving the banks, but our next guest argues it completely failed in its other mission. Neil Barofsky joins us now. He's the former inspector general in charge of the TARP program. His new book is called Bailout, an inside account of how Washington abandoned Main Street while rescuing Wall Street. And Neil, you write that TARP failed to meet its most important goals. What are the goals you're talking about?
I think whenever you're evaluating a government program, you have to go back and look at what was the program supposed to do when it was first rolled out.
Right.
And for the TARP, part of it was to save the large banks and prevent financial Armageddon, and it was successful in doing that. But there were a lot of other goals, really important goals. I mean, this was a program that was intended not just to help the Wall Street elites. It was also supposed to help the broader economy. It was supposed to restore lending so that the deep recession we're in, we could have a rapid recovery that, as we now know, never materialized. It was supposed to help struggling homeowners. That was at the very heart of the TARP bill. In order to get that bill passed, Treasury had to make a promise to Congress. Because you understand, Congress didn't want to just shovel hundreds of billions of dollars into a bunch of banks that had just caused the financial crisis. And what they expected and what they were promised and what was written into the bill was meaningful help for homeowners through foreclosure relief. And first the Bush administration under Hank Paulson, and then the Obama administration under Tim Geithner, they never fulfilled that promise.
But was that promise codified? I mean, were there standards that they had to live up to?
Well, in the law, written into the law under the goals was to preserve home ownership. Now, you have to remember that TARP, when it was originally pitched to Congress, it was explained as a program that was going to buy a whole bunch of mortgages.
Right.
$700 billion of mortgages and bonds that contained mortgages. And what got written into the law was to require Treasury to then modify those mortgages once they bought them. So that actually was in the law. What happened, though, the law was so broad that Treasury decided not to do that. They never bought the mortgages. Instead, they just shoveled the money into the banks to keep them from going under. So that promise essentially got abandoned. But that promise came back in January of 2009 when the Obama administration was taking
the
over. The second part of TARP. And that was the second part of the promise. Okay, we're going to use $50 billion to help homeowners through foreclosure relief. That was the promise that was made to help pry that second tranche of TARP money out of Congress. And what happens to that $50 billion? When I stepped down, about 1.4 of it had been spent. Now today, almost 4 years after TARP was passed, the number's up to about $3 billion.
Now, out of 50.
And just to put that into perspective, American Express got more TARP money than all of the struggling homeowners in this country. And that is an epic failure.
Well, I have so many questions for you, but let's start with this one, which is, you know, we've heard the argument, especially from the Obama administration, of two things. Number one, they were convinced that the banks were the best qualified to know what to do with these troubled mortgages. And that's why they handed the money directly over to the banks, that the banks had assured them they were going to help loosen up credit, right, and reevaluate some of these mortgages to help out homeowners. That was one of the first arguments. The second one is that they weren't entirely sure how to fix it, right, that it was such a complex problem that the program didn't work because they tried something that failed, that we still haven't figured out how to fix the mortgage crisis.
I mean, both those arguments are pretty nonsensical, to be honest with you. There were a lot of suggestions on how to fix the mortgage modification program that Treasury just ignored, swatted aside, or refused to adopt, including things like principal reduction, which is, you know, a pretty proven way to avoid
bringing the principal down so that you owe as much as the house is worth.
Right. But I think there's an even more important point that you made at the beginning of your question, which is this sense of deference to the financial institutions. The sense, well, we don't know how to do it, so we'll just trust the banks. The banks will figure it out. And this is one of the key problems that I saw down in Washington, was this within the culture of the Treasury Department and in Washington in general, there is this deference or even almost a deification of the executives at these large financial institutions. When I first got down there, you know, part of my job, not just for the housing program, but for TARP overall, was to go in there and look at these programs and make recommendations and try to keep them from being defrauded, you know, being victims of fraud, of the banks taking advantage of loopholes or lack of conditions or conflict of interest that are baked into the program. That was my essential job. And I started, I think about on my seventh or eighth day, I started making recommendations. And first to the Paulson team and then to the Geithner team, I kept getting the same response over and over again. It was almost with a figurative pat on my head. And as I was pointing these things out, they would say, Neil, you don't understand. Sure, there might be some problems here and some loopholes, but we don't need to worry about those because these are the big banks. And these banks, they would never risk their reputations. That was the word I kept heard over and over again. They would not risk their reputations by unfairly trying to profit off of the taxpayer. And I was just floored when I heard this. It was almost as if they hadn't seen the behavior of the banks in the couple of years preceding the crisis, where they demonstrated that they would put profit over everything, particularly their reputations. At one point, I told Bill Dudley, who is now the president of the New York Fed, they're rolling out a $200 billion program that had almost no fraud control, had no compliance regime. And I confronted him. I said, what are we going to do to protect the taxpayer? And he told me not to worry because they were going to rely on the credit rating agencies. And I said to him at the time, I said, Bill, really? After what we just saw with the credit rating agencies, who performed abysmally during the financial crisis, who were being credited actually as one of the key causes of the financial crisis.
Because they were giving people high ratings when they were filled with toxic mortgages.
Right. They had their own conflicts of interest. They were paid off by the banks, and they just did this horrible, terrible job. How can you rely on those, Bill? And he looked at me and he said, well, we're not worried because we're confident that the rating agencies won't embarrass themselves again.
But was there no stick? I mean, you were there to oversee TARP. You had no enforcement mechanism?
Well, over time, I learned how to have more of an impact. So I banged my head against the wall with Treasury, and I banged my head against the wall with the Fed. But then I realized I needed to go to Congress. I needed to go to the press. I needed to go to the public and get external pressure on them. And ultimately, that $200 billion program, we got some really significant protections built in. But the mindset down there was always like that. Another program, another TARP program, this one was supposed to be a $1 trillion program that was going to money. It was going to go to the giant investment houses. And again, recommendation after recommendation got beaten back by Treasury. And I talked to another colleague of mine at the New York Fed, and this is someone from the New York Fed, and I think he described it perfectly, because what we later found out was that Treasury wasn't really designing the program. The investment houses themselves were the ones who had designed the program for Treasury. And his comment to me was, Neil, it's like the Treasury officials' lips are moving, but the words are being supplied by Larry Fink, who is the CEO of
BlackRock, one
of the biggest investment funds that was directly going to profit off of this and was going to be able to take advantage of the very problems that I was pointing out. And that's the problem in Washington right now. Our regulatory system is completely captured, and that's what I saw when I was down there.
But here's the thing for me, Neil. I mean, like any other average American, I look at some of these scandals, and I have to ask myself, why is nothing changing in Washington?
Money and power and incentives. And ultimately, you have to remember, it really comes down to incentives. So when you look at our regulators, the people who are supposed to be clamping down on this, you got to remember, they're made up of human beings. And the revolving door between Wall Street and Washington, between the banks and the regulators, is a very, very strong disincentive to regulators to actually do their jobs.
You mean that the same people who take jobs with the government overseeing the financial industry are the same people that might at some point take a job at J.P. Morgan and Goldman Sachs?
Exactly. So what I saw within the leadership positions were often people who had come from those banks. So they're infected with that ideology to begin with.
So what do we do? I mean, I get outraged over and over and over again. Every single time I see a new scandal coming up in which there's strong evidence that someone in the banking industry has manipulated something for their own benefit, we're told over and over, that's just a bad apple. It's a problem with a bad apple. There's nothing wrong with the industry. So what do I, as an average American citizen, do?
We need to break up the banks. That is first and foremost. They have too much power. And part of the problem is they're so significant to the economy that if one of them were to go down, if one of them were to fail, we would have to bail them out again. It's not even a choice. You know, they were big before the financial crisis, but thanks to the policies that were implemented by our government, they're now bigger. Rather than breaking them up and trying to limit the damage, they're now 20-25% larger than they were before the crisis, which means they're more powerful, more dangerous. When you're that big, you don't have to follow the rules of the road. You can violate the law. You can make huge ethical lapses. You can bet hundreds of billions of dollars of taxpayer guaranteed money, which is what Jamie Dimon did at JP Morgan, and lose $5.8 billion. And you know what? If you lose $58 billion, the taxpayer is going to be there to bail you out. The incentives are completely out of whack. They encourage risk taking. They encourage illegal behavior. So we have to change that. And one way we have to do it is make it so that no financial institution, no group of executives is so powerful that our entire country is held hostage to their bad decision making. Otherwise, I promise you, what we saw in 2008 is going to seem like a mild bump in the road compared to what the next financial crisis will be.
So another financial Armageddon predicted by Neil Barofsky, former inspector general in charge of the TARP program, author of the new book, Bailout. Neil, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.